great. So I don't know about you, but I could really use a serenity prayer. How about we have a moment of silence and serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. My name's Sandy, and I'm alcoholic. And I haven't had a drink for 13,154 days today. And before you start calculating, on July 18th, I celebrated 36 years of continuous sobriety. Which is why Kim asked me, she said, well, it's your birthday. So let's begin. I get nervous because I don't, you know, people always think the great speakers are the ones who had the 63 DUIs, or they got in some horrible car accident, or they killed somebody, or they tried to kill their husband. I don't have any of that. None of that happened, but I drank a lot. I'll tell you that for sure. And my drinking actually started, I was 14 when I started to drink, and my friend, she was my best friend at the time. Her name was Lori, and she lived across the street from these two brothers. They had bought the house across the street. Her older sister was dating one of the guys, and they had a housewarming party. And we walked in the front door and got the biggest glasses we could find and filled them all the way with vodka with just a little bit of orange juice just to color it. And we walked out the back door and we went out and we drank it. And that was my first big adventure with drinking, and I don't really remember anything else that happened that night. But I do remember that after that, I drank every opportunity that I could get. And I dated a guy older than me who could get alcohol when I was in high school. And you know, I was always the good girl. I have an older sister who, yeah, she's a story in and of herself, and a brother who was always getting into trouble, and I was the good girl, right? I was the one that got all the good grades. I was the one that did all that stuff. I had friends that my parents liked and all of that, so I hid my drinking, and I successfully did that for many years. I hid my drinking, and I remember being old enough to drive and being glad that I could be away and drink. And I do remember one day puking all day the next day. And of course, my parents figured that part out, right? But they thought it was just, you know, whatever, sowing my wild oats. They didn't realize that it was quite a field of oats to sow. And so I just kept that up, but I managed to pull things together. I graduated from high school with a really good GPA. I went to college, although I did have to pause in college. It's a long story, but I took a semester off because I had some things happen that were directly related to me drinking and getting into trouble, mostly sleeping around. But I managed to graduate from college, and I even got into medical school. What happened was gradually my drinking just gradually got more and more and more. And of course, I gravitated toward the people who drank like I did. At one point, my brother tried to teach me how to roll a joint. That lasted about 5 minutes. And he said, buy a pipe. So I did. When I got sober, I did what they then called the marijuana maintenance program, right? Because my drinking story is about, especially at the end, I drank and drank and drank and drank until I couldn't stand it anymore, and then I would smoke pot. And then I would end up doing them both whatever. I'm the alcoholic in the big book, pounding on the bar, although for me it was my coffee table, wondering how I got there one more time, because I had quit so many times. And I had no idea that I was an alcoholic, because I still pulled things together on the outside. I still managed to pull things together. I managed to graduate from medical school in 1987 in June, and the day I graduated, I hadn't had anything for 2 weeks. And it was felt like a miracle to me because it was one more time. I was sick, I was tired, I couldn't do it. And so I managed to make it 2 weeks without anything, and it was just, I made it a few more days after that, and something happened. Actually, what happened was I got a resentment. And I went right back to where I was. I always kept pot in my car, and it started with me smoking pot in my car on the way someplace, and then I was drinking again, and I just took off. And my world had gotten very, very small. So my life had gotten to the point where I didn't really feel, well, I had just started being loaded when I was supposed to be on call, for one thing, and as a student, and then I didn't want to hang out with people who didn't drink like I did, and even the people that I thought drank like I did didn't really drink like I did. And I remember the disapproval, I remember that look in their eyes. That just disgust, and I wasn't interested in that. So more and more and more, it was me and my alcohol at home. So I had actually started my internship, and it was a rotating internship. I did a family practice residency, and I had absolutely no choice over what rotation I did when. So my first 2 weeks started out in radiology, and then the 2 weeks after that, I got sent to rotate through the treatment center. And go ahead, laugh. So the Saturday before was my last drunk. It was supposed to start on Monday, the Saturday before, and I had canceled some people were going out for dinner. I had canceled my dinner plans. I closed my blinds. I drank what was in the house, which unfortunately was wine coolers. And I watched Jerry Lewis movies on TV, and that was my last drunk. And I managed to not drink on Sunday, and then I went into the treatment center on Monday and did rounds right at the beginning, and then I got assigned to group. And I went and I sat down in group, and both Monday and Tuesday, these two guys were doing their first steps in group. And on the outside, they were really, really different from me. One guy was black and had one front tooth. I don't know what he had in the back of his mouth. And the other guy was white and wore motorcycle leathers, right? And the white guy had done heroin as part of his story. And they looked very different from me. And as they did their first steps, they told my story. Both of them told my story. And I remember having my buns just glued to that folding chair, thinking, if they're alcoholics, I'm an alcoholic. And interestingly enough, a friend of mine was finishing that same internship. He was there an extra month because he had gone through treatment in January of the year and got sober. And we were big drinkers. We were big buddies. And I went to his house on Tuesday after work, and I went to his house and said, I think I'm an alcoholic. And he did his little happy dance. He was so excited. And what he did was he took out his meeting schedule and circled meetings for me. And so I ended up going Thursday to my first meeting, and I drove around and I found the church, and I was absolutely mortified that I had to ask somebody where the AA meeting was. But it was somebody who was going to the AA meeting, so that wasn't so bad. But I went to the meeting, and it was a little circle of tables, and they decided, since I was a newcomer, they would talk about step one. So they talked about step one, and they went around the table, and every single person told a part of my story. Every single person talked about the experience I had, and they talked about that emptiness inside, and they talked about the desperation, and they talked about that look of disgust from other people, and they talked about not being able to stay away from the drink, and they talked about that self-loathing that I had. And then they talked about how Alcoholics Anonymous had changed that for them. And I've been able to stay sober since that day. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for that. So I immediately started going to meetings. And at one point, I flipped out. I don't even remember what I flipped out about, but I decided I needed to go through treatment. So I went through treatment at the place where I had been doing rotations. And I came out of there, and it was good. I'm glad that I did. I'm glad that I did that. It was what I needed to do. Everything that's happened to me is what I needed to do. But I came out, and I started going to my aftercare thing on Monday night, and I would go there, and then I went to meetings. But before aftercare started, there was this meeting on Monday night that I really, really liked. But I'd go to aftercare, and I would listen to people whine and complain. And then I would go to this meeting where they would talk about the solution. And so I told my aftercare leader, I'm not going to aftercare anymore. I'm going to this meeting. Because I had been to a lot of meetings, and I decided to pick that one for my home group. And it was called the Southsiders meeting. This is in Tucson. It's called Southsiders Group, and everybody called, I didn't know this at the time, but I found out later, everybody called them brown shirts and big book Nazis and big book thumpers and all of that stuff, because there was like an 85 people meeting, maybe 80, 85 people. They'd all sat around tables, and you got a sponsor and you did the steps. And if you didn't want to do the step, if you don't want to do the steps, I don't want to sponsor you. That's what you got told. And so I had a sponsor. I actually met my first sponsor. I think this might have been before I went into treatment, but I met my first sponsor crying and slobbering on her during a break in a meeting. And then this was even before I joined Southsiders. And then she was a psychotherapist, and she got a job where she was going to be working nights, and I'm obviously working days, and I wasn't going to see her. And she's like, "You can do it. You can." And I'm like, "No, I can't do it." And so I found another sponsor, and I had joined Southsiders at that point, but this lady was not in Southsiders. But I called her one night, and she said, "You know what? If you're going to whine so much, why don't you just go get drunk?" And so I called a lady from Southsiders. It was women's meeting night. The guys used to call it the bag stag. And and I called, her name was Dee Dee, and I called her, and she came and picked me up and took me to the meeting. And I ended up going to that meeting, and I didn't get a sponsor because I had a list of criteria, right? This person needed to do this, they needed to do that, they needed to be like this. And I ended up, several weeks later, at that same meeting, I swear to God, every single woman in the room said, "Sandy, do you have a sponsor? Who's going to be your sponsor? Have you asked somebody new to be your sponsor? Do you have a sponsor?" I'm like, okay, fine. So I ended up asking a lady named Sally to be my sponsor, who met zero of the criteria except for that she was sober and she would work on the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and going to meetings. And she's the one whose voice I hear all the time still in my head. And oh, by the way, I let people know I'm going to be speaking here. So I have three of my sponsees here today. So that if nothing else, they've heard my stories, so they'll know, I can't lie, because they've heard them all before. And they've heard this stuff, too. So Sally is the one who said to me, "Sandy, willingness is great, but you still have to do it." And then I was actually reminded today in my home group earlier today that she also said to me, "Sandy, you're feeling guilty because you're guilty." And then I also remember her saying, "You're not overwhelmed, just do one thing at a time." And those were, the things that I lived by. She just had these little sound bites that she would do. And I remember doing my fourth step with her and going over my amends list and having her say, "You both got what you deserved, move on." And neither one of you deserves an amends for that. But she's the one who continued with me, right? I had started on the steps with this other sponsor, but we went again, and I worked through the steps with Sally. And Sally, I mean, honest to God, she talked to me from about this far away. And she also, as well as other home group members, taught me how to laugh at myself, because she would laugh at me from this far away. And she taught me how to laugh at myself. And so I got into the steps, and I remember getting on step 9, and I was going to be moving to Long Beach. I did my second and third year in Long Beach, California. And I had given up the lease on my apartment, and I was living with a girlfriend until it was time to go to Long Beach. And I had started on my 9th step, and one of the people to whom I owned amends lived in Chicago. And I had written him an amends letter. And I remember sitting at, we actually went through treatment together. We used to hang the mystery meat up on the flycatcher to see if flies would be attracted. So that's how professional I was. But I remember sitting at our kitchen table after getting a letter back from this amends letter that I got. And I sat there and I cried and thought, you know, relationships can be healed, life can be changed. And that was, it wasn't the first time, but it was when I really, really knew that this was really working, that something had really happened. So I moved to Long Beach, and I was there for 2 years, and I joined a completely different home group. I belonged to Bellflower Big Book Group, which is kind of an offshoot of the Pacific Group, if you know them. And my home group was a speaker meeting. But I did the same thing that I had done in Tucson. I went to meetings as often as I could because my schedule didn't allow me to go every day, but I went as often as I could, and pretty much the same people were there all the time. And I actually got a different sponsor there who was somebody that was kind of a sister group of my home group in Tucson. And then she wasn't really working out, and she was really far away, so you can see I've had sponsor issues. So I got another sponsor that was part of Bellflower Big Book Group, and she was my sponsor for a long time, even after I moved from there. It was just a really different place, right? You wore a dress. I would have worn a dress today, and I would have had to have my full makeup on. And it was, and I realized, and my sponsor had a gazillion sponsees, and quite a few of them actually turned their paychecks over to her, and she made their budget for them and would dole out money to them. Right, that's how they did it. It was just very, very rigid. And at the time it was what I needed. The one thing I remember, there was a newcomer that I had kind of taken under my wing, and I was telling my sponsor about it. We were on the way to a meeting and we were driving along, and I was telling her about my discussion with this newcomer. And she stopped at a red light, and she stopped, and she turned, and she looked at me, and she said, "You two are real thinkers, aren't you?" and that was a good aha moment for me. A lot of stuff happened during that time. The biggest thing that happened was I met this man who lived in Santa Cruz, and we were both helping teach this course. And I met him, and we started long-distance dating. And so when I finished my residency, I moved up to Santa Cruz. I ended up getting a job up there. And at the time, he was going to Adult Children of Alcoholics, and then he switched to Al-Anon. And so we were both in program. We actually didn't live together till we were married. But oh my God, you know, I don't know if they still say it. They talk about how having a relationship puts Miracle-Gro on your character defects, right? Yeah. I remember calling I had my sponsor in Long Beach for a long time at least 2 years when I lived in Santa Cruz, and about 2.5 actually. And I remember calling her one day complaining about him, and she said, "All right, listen carefully, because this is the last time you're going to hear this. You are absolutely right." He's the problem. You know, I don't even remember all that she said, but it was complete sarcasm, if you can imagine that. And it was just, you know, it took me a long time to learn to look at me. And it was through things like that, and it just went along. So we ended up getting married in 1992, June 28th, 1992. We just celebrated 31 years of marriage. And he had a daughter who was 5 when we met, and his ex-wife is batshit crazy. So that was a whole adventure about dealing with people. And I've had several episodes with her. The last one, I actually screamed at her on the phone. And I'm like, "Oh my God, why did I even pick up the phone?" But I learned a lot about that. And each time I learned a lot about me. And then we had a son in 1994. Oh my God, on and on and on. So, and having a kid together, and he didn't want the baby. It was an accident. It wasn't an accident. I mean, I know how you get pregnant, but we hadn't intended to get pregnant. And we were doing what we were supposed to do to not get pregnant, but we got pregnant anyway. And he didn't want the baby, and I'm like, "Fine, if you want to leave, that's fine, but I'm keeping the baby." But we kept the baby, and that's a whole nother story. And I went into business for myself. I opened my own practice, as people did in those days. And it was pretty easy, really, to work for myself, right? And we were in practice together for a while. We actually didn't fight about that. We fought about other stupid things. But there were several episodes where it was clear to me that that I still had work to do. And I had three different sponsors while I lived in Santa Cruz. I don't need to go into all that, but I had three different sponsors. None of them fired me. And after that first one that did. But they're here, I'm gonna tell this in honor of Lisa. So I was like 8 years sober. We got married in June. I turned 5 years sober that same year. Actually, September of that year, I was sitting in, this is 1990, I was sitting in my regular Friday night meeting. It was not my home group, but I went to it every week. I was going to five meetings a week at least. I had a sponsor. I was doing the steps. I had a service commitment. I did all that stuff. I had just gotten married, and I was sitting there in my Friday night meeting deciding whether I was going to go home and drink or kill myself. And I remembered that I had actually been not feeling good, and I had talked to a lady in my home group who gave me the number of her psychiatrist. And I went home. Well, and first thing I did was I called my sponsor, who said, "Have you talked to your husband about this?" Well, why not? And then I called the psychiatrist's office, and he called me back, and he actually took his lunch hour to have an appointment with me on Monday, and I learned about the value of asking for outside help. And there was a long time, at least 2 years after that, there was exactly two places where I felt completely safe, and one was in his office and one was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did a lot of work during that time, both with him, with my sponsor, with the steps, with all of that stuff. I did a lot of work. And I kept my husband in the loop about what was going on. And then not very long after that, I had a baby, and he was premature, and then he didn't sleep, and then we went around and around and around. And we were at the airport. We had just come back from I don't even know where. And the cell phones were pretty new, and I couldn't find my husband. He was supposed to go get the car or something, and I had the kid who was less than two, and he didn't answer his phone, and I'm getting more and more anxious, and I'm getting angrier and angrier, and we're in the Sacramento airport in baggage claim, and he finally shows up, and I'm like, "Where the F have you been?" And I'm screaming at him in the airport. I'm like 8 years sober, and I'm screaming at him. The entire baggage department at the Sacramento airport could hear me. And he finally grabs my son out of my hand and said, "I'm not getting in a car with you." And he and Corey took the bus home, and I drove home, and then I ended up having to deal with the aftermath of that, and that's, you know, try to make an amends for that, right? I remember, and he did actually speak to me after that, but fast forward, I moved up here. I was 12 years sober when I moved up here. I moved to Fairfield. My husband had been living up here for a year because he got a job up here in Vallejo. We moved to Fairfield because we were between Vacaville and Vallejo, and he had a job. So my son and I were coming up here every weekend and then going back to Santa Cruz, blah, 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 blah. That was a really stressful time. And we moved up here just after my son turned five. And then the following January, I got a sponsor up here who was my sponsor until about 3 years ago. And that was just a case of we had been sponsor and sponsee too long, and she had other sponsees that were more needy, and I just felt like I wasn't getting the attention that I needed, so I switched sponsors at that time. And and I'm really happy with the sponsor I have now as well. And I'm trying to think, there's been so many adventures that have happened in my sobriety, but what are they? In 2006, my big sister got married. Right after that was Father's Day. Right after that, and my stepdaughter was graduating from college on the same day as my sister got married. So my husband was there. I was at my sister's wedding. We had Father's Day, and then I went back home. My mother and father were driving to Montana for my uncle's 50th wedding anniversary. My parents had just had their 50th wedding anniversary in December. And on the way, the following Thursday, I'm on my way to my then home group meeting. I'm on the way, and my little sister calls me and tells me that my dad was killed in a car accident. And my mother was in the hospital with a punctured lung, and my aunt had been in the car with her, and she had broken her neck. She was not paralyzed. She ended up being fine. But and so I dropped everything. She asked me if I would call some of the other people. And the first person I called was my sponsor, who the meeting had started. So she didn't get the phone call till after the meeting ended. And I called the other relatives that I had been assigned to call. And then as soon as the meeting was over and my sponsor got the call, it was 9:30. The meeting used to go till 9:15. And she called me and she said, "I'm on my way over." So she came over to my house and got there at whatever, 9:45 at night, and stayed with me until I didn't need her anymore. And that, I mean, that just filled my heart that she would do that for me. And that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We do that. And I remember talking about it in AA, and AA's rallying around me and supporting me and being there with me. And I didn't have to drink over it, because the same day that my dad was killed in a car accident, my husband's stepdad died in the hospital of pneumonia. He hadn't been expected to die. He went in with pneumonia and poof, he was dead. That was in June, end of June. And then in August, my stepdaughter was drinking and driving and was going on a winding road down in Santa Barbara area and got in a head-on collision and killed her passenger, broke both of her feet, broke ribs in her. She still suffers from that injury. And it was just a really, really hard year. And I had a lot of feelings, right? A lot of pain, a lot of feelings. And so I talked about it. And I got to enjoy having feelings and not having to drink about it and be as supportive as I could, because as you can imagine, my stepdaughter's ordeal went on for a really long time, and she went to prison and blah, 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 blah. And by the way, she's doing fine now. She's says she's not an alcoholic. She lives in Wisconsin. She loves the whole craft beer thing. She's married an absolutely beautiful woman. And thank God, because she could not pick men to save her life. But we absolutely love her wife. And she's great. She's doing great. She has a good life. And then, let's see, where are we? 6 years ago, 7 years ago, 2016. My son is just about to graduate from college. He calls in March and says, "Mom, I'm thinking about committing suicide." And he was in San Jose, so I said, "We'll be right down." We went down and picked him up. At that time, I was working at North Bay. I had been in my own practice here. North Bay invited me to come and join them. I was there. I called and said, "My son's had an emergency." And they didn't need to know, right? So I said, "My son had an emergency. I'm not going to be there tomorrow." So I went and we got him some help that he needed. But my husband and I didn't communicate with each other correctly about it, and he felt slighted and ended up thinking that somehow I was blaming him for this and I wasn't talking to him, and so he didn't speak to me. Literally, he did not speak to me for 2 weeks. And that was really horribly painful, along with this, what was going on with my son. And boy, did I rely on AA. And I actually ended up walking upstairs one day and grabbing his copy of the Al-Anon book, The Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage. And I read that and went, "Oh my God, I'm the Al-Anon and he's the alcoholic." So the woman who is now my sponsor, I was talking to her about, she said, "Have you ever been to Al-Anon?" And so she took me to my first Al-Anon meeting. And I've been going to Al-Anon ever since as well, which is, it's the same 12 steps, but it's just a little different focus. And it has really, I have constantly been told about how it shaved many of the rough edges off of me that were left over. And so I doubled down on, now I have an Al-Anon sponsor and an AA sponsor, and I work both programs, but it was, what I did was rely on my programs. I relied on, go to more meetings, talk to more people, be honest about what's going on, and just because I'm sober a long time doesn't mean that I need to sit in the meeting and say everything's rosy and peaches and cream. And I also learned, I knew it already, but I really, really learned, I started in my morning prayers, in my gratitude list, it was then that I started thanking my higher power directly for all the things that I liked, but I also thanked my higher power for the pain. And I thanked my higher power for the crap that was going on, for an opportunity to grow and for an opportunity to get closer to my higher power. And I've maintained that ever since. And nowadays I say, I actually get kind of frustrated in meetings when people are talking about all these wonderful things, or they got a $250 check in their mailbox that they weren't expecting. And I always think, well, where's mine? That's what I think. But that taught me that, a God shot a gift is, it's either a, it can be a shining ray of light, or it can be a steaming pile of shit. Either one. And I don't know which one of those is going to be at the best gift, because they've helped me a lot. So anyway, we ended up getting through that. And then my husband and I seriously looked at, what do we need to do? You know, where did our communication break down? So our relationship got better. Then in September, I actually ended up taking my son to the emergency room because he was feeling suicidal again. And I drove down to San Jose and I took him to the emergency room. He was admitted he ended up on a 14-day hold and then did outpatient. I just touched your phone. It looks like it's still recording. And then that was really stressful. And then shortly after that, we went up to visit my family, my mom, my dad was long gone, and my mother. By that time, she was using a walker, and she, for many, many years, and at that time she still was, she had dad's ashes in the box and the little velveteen package that came from the funeral home, and she would put it on her walker and carry it around the house with her, and then it would sit on his pillow at nighttime because she just missed him so much. And she never really did come back to life after that, but she stayed around for a long time. But we went up there and I hungry, angry, lonely, tired. I hadn't gotten enough sleep. Things were stressful, and I ended up getting mad at my husband. And that time he didn't speak to me for 3 weeks. And that's the last time that's happened. And what we ended up doing with that, this is not strictly AA, but every day, so this is so funny too. So I have to start it if it's an even dated day. My husband has to start it if it's an odd dated day. And it starts out with, tell me about your day, or how is your day? This came from our couples therapist, but it's very AA because whatever. And then, so he's telling me about his day and I have to say, well, it sounds like you were really frustrated about that, or it sounds like that made you really angry, or it sounds like you were really proud of yourself, or you were really happy. So I got to, hear some stuff. And he would say, yes, no, maybe, I felt this way, I felt that way. And then when he's done telling me about his day, I have to appreciate him for at least two things that happened that day. Sometimes it's making the bed. Sometimes I just say, I really appreciate that you've been my husband all this time. Whatever it is. And sometimes there's 23 things that I appreciate him for. Sometimes, five or six is not uncommon. And then it's my turn to tell him about his day. So then a couple of years ago, we'd been doing this since whatever it was, 2017, a couple of years ago, he's like, hey, I have the odd days. So that means every time we have a month with 31 days, I have to do 2 days in a row, and you don't have to do that. So I'm thinking about that for a minute. That's cracking me up, right? So now, if it's an even numbered month, but it has 31 days, I have to do 30th and the 31st. If it's an odd numbered month, he has to do the 31st and the 1st. Well, it turns out that there's an odd number of months that have 31 days. So July, we skip the 31st. But I can't stand that we skip a day, so I always just do the 31st on July. But what happened was my husband started talking to me all over again. I started hearing all kinds of things about his life. And I started really having empathy for what he was going through in his life. And what really helped me, at one point before that, I had been taught about a true amends is, and I had already done plenty of ninth step amends, but I was taught that a true amends is where, not just where I say I'm sorry, but where I try to imagine what it must have been like for that person when I behaved that way. And I try to say, I'm it sounds like you must have been really hurt when I did this, or, whatever, I don't blame you for yelling at me, or whatever it was. But to try to imagine how my behavior affected other people. And that has been such a boon in my marriage. And I've found that since I'm doing it every day with my husband, I do it with other people too. And it's helped me to come back to what's my inventory, right? One thing that I'm fond of saying to my sponsees when they come in and go, blah, 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 is, great, we've taken their inventory. Now let's take yours. And they don't like that very much, but it amuses me. I always tell them, I feel so sorry for you because you've got such a sarcastic sponsor. But then the other thing that I do with them is when they come in and tell me about stuff is I try to tell them, but look where you were a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. Look where you were then and look where you are now. And yeah, you made a couple of mistakes in there, but let's look at what you did right in there too. And I love that, watching them find their way and watching them see their mistakes and see their character defects, but also learn to feel good about themselves and have some faith in themselves in the program of AA. All right, where are we? So 2 years ago, there was two of us that did what I do. I do kind of an odd kind of medicine, and there was two of us at North Bay doing it. And I was actually up at my mom's. My mom had gotten sick, so I was going up to my mom's. I was trying to go up for a long weekend every month. And I was up at my mom's, and I got a call Friday morning. They had met with her Thursday afternoon and told her bye-bye. No warning, no nothing. They arranged a meeting at 4:00 on Thursday. I said, well, I'm going to be gone. And so the president called me the next day and starts out, and I'm thinking, great, he's going to fire me over the phone. But they got rid of her, so I was the only one. So I'm trying to do my patients and her patients and all the new patients that are coming in, and it's crazy. And I end up doing this absolutely insane schedule at work because I'm really trying to be useful and be of service. And I had the most, oh my God, I had the most fabulous medical assistant and the most fabulous front office person who has no program in their life. And they actually know all about being of service to other people and being kind no matter what. And I'm thinking, that is so amazing to me that they don't have to work at it, because I'm the one who I have to work at it. I have to have the 12 steps, right? And I had a post-it on my computer that said, TWBD, thy will be done, because it reminded me that I wasn't in charge. And they didn't have trouble with that. So they were absolutely amazing, and I loved them to death. Anyway, where was I? Sorry, thinking about the wonderful people that I worked with. So last year, July 11th, last year, they came in at the end of the day. North Bay has just been doing some really weird stuff. And they, in the morning, they fired 30 nurses at Vacaville Hospital. And then late in the morning, they fired 20% of their mid-level administration. And then they walked into my office as I was finishing with my last patient. I said, oh, you're here to fire me. And they were. What they said was, we're eliminating your department. And so July 12th was my last day there. And I had, it was time to renew my contract. But I remember thinking, I don't know. I wanted to do one more 3-year contract because they paid me a lot of money. And I was padding my retirement account, right? And I thought, I want 3 more years of this money. But then I thought, you know, can I do this another 3 years? So apparently my higher power said, no, you can't. And it's become obvious to me that it was exactly what should have happened. And I'm keeping it really simple now. I'm actually renting a space from a friend of mine. I have like a little room. It's in the back of a Pilates studio. And I'm seeing people, keeping it really, really simple. There's a lot of stuff that I'm not doing that I would like to do, but it's okay. But I go in there with the attitude of being of service and helping my patients and keeping it good, you know, keeping it simple. And the thing that's so weird is people think that I know what I'm doing. And people think that I'm nice. And there's even people that miss me when I'm gone. That was not the case. I mean, my life was so small, I'm not sure I really had any friends left when I got here. And it's taken me a while, but I just realized in the past couple of months that recovering from the strain of, my mom eventually died in October of 2021, and then we had to clean up her whole estate, and they had stuff and stuff and more stuff, collectibles and things actually worth money and blah, 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 blah. And then dealing with my family, I had a big eye-opening thing. I stayed a few days too long, and one day my older sister and I had two fights in the same day where we screamed at each other. And what it helped me was to see my part in our relationship, and it helped me to see how much my attitude toward her was not helpful in the least. And so what I was able to do is change my attitude and you know, cause, and I kept trying, I kept, not giving her the respect of living her own life is what I was doing. And since I have been doing that and not trying to fix her or do any of that, our relationship is so much better. So I realized just in the last couple of months that I'm coming, you know, I have energy now to like hang out with my AA girlfriends and come and do stuff like this. This would have been like, oh, I'll go, but you know, I'm tired. So it's kind of exciting to be here today. And let's see, the most recent thing that happened was, it was an absolute nightmare getting, my mom bought it, but we bought this fancy headstone thing that my dad's and mom's ashes got put in cylindrical urns and put up inside the stone. It's a special section of the cemetery. But the cemetery, they had it all made, but when they were installing it, they broke it. So they had to mine it and do it again. And then they lost the picture, blah, 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 blah. And I'm the one talking to them very calmly saying, every time, because they never knew what, nobody ever knew anything. I had to start all over again, and I very calmly explained to them every single time what we'd been through and how I would like it if they would put a little bit of a wiggle on it. Well, they didn't, but I never yelled at anybody, but I was responsible for that. So, on my birthday, July 18th, my husband and I drove up to Washington because I had a bunch of stuff to take to my sister, and on my birthday, my brother and two sisters and I, and my husband and my brother's, she's his spouse for all intents and purposes, got together and we got to be there at the cemetery and talk about mom and dad and remember them and then put the urns up inside and have the thing put back in and be able to put them to rest and to say goodbye. And the next day, my little sister was staying at the same hotel where we were, and the next day before we went over and joined the family, we went back to the cemetery and we each got to spend some time there alone, and the other one walked around and did whatever. But I remember standing there, you know, and I talked to mom and dad, and I got to feel sad all over again, right? Because dad's been gone a long time, but I got to feel sad, and you know, and I don't have a mom and dad now. And I got to miss my mom again, and I got to have those feelings, but I also, and it was, I felt like, okay, this is the next stage of grief. It's the next stage, and I'm just walking through that. And I've had days of sadness ever since mom died, where I'm just like, on her birthday this year, I just was sad all day long, and I just said, okay, I'm sad today. It's okay. I get to be sad. And I went to work, and I talked to everybody, and I did my little thing, and I thought, I just feel sad. And I thank my higher power for the capacity to feel that, to grieve them. And you know what? I was able to make a living amends to my parents for both of them before they died. And we had really good relationships. And I remember, I have that feeling of standing there in front of their stone and being grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and being grateful for recovery. Because it gave me the ability to have this love and to go up there and I am proud to say that I behaved myself the entire time that I was there. And my brother is the biggest problem for me to behave with, but I started out doing what I needed to do, and it turns out apparently there's some things that have happened in his life and he was like a whole new guy. And so that was really, really nice. And I feel like we can reestablish a relationship now that we didn't have before. And the reason is because I talked to both of my sponsors two or three times before I went up there just to review, and let's talk about what I'm gonna do, and let's talk about me, and let's talk about my part, and let's talk about what's gonna come out of my mouth and not come out of my mouth. And I got to go and be there and be a good sister and be a good daughter. And you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me how to be a good friend and how to be a good mother. Because my son he's 28 and he still suffers from depression and he won't take meds and he won't go to therapy. And he has been told to go to Alcoholics Anonymous and he won't go because of this God thing. He claims that I dragged him around to meetings and he heard all about that God thing when he was little, and so he just doesn't want to do that. And I'm like, okay, whatever. whatever. And it's his life. And I just tell him that I love him and I support him however I can. And I don't know, like I said, my husband and I are, we have the best relationship we've ever had. Best relationship we've ever had, and it just keeps getting better. And he just retired, beginning of June, he retired, so he was available to go up with me to Washington. And, you know, and I said, do you want to go? And he's like, of course I want to go. And he was supportive not only of me, but of all of my siblings. And again, I'm so grateful for the program. And, you know, my prayer every day is, please keep me sober and in recovery. Because we start out just not drinking one day at a time, but that's not what recovery is about. Recovery is about taking care of all the other stuff, because it's been a long time since I had a drink. But my brain still goes there and my feelings still go there, and the program is still really, really important to me. So I think with that, I will wrap it up. Thank you so much for listening to me. Thank you for being here.
Usually, I'm sure we have food out there in the room that you're more than welcome to. And we usually try to circle up. And I want to thank Sandy again for that.